Not Terrible. I'm Jess Hooker, along with Mary Graham. This is episode 7 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're discussing parenting, how we were parented, how we parent our own children, and bridging the gap in between. We'll share some tender moments and a few funny stories that left us wondering why our parents didn't send us to boarding school. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
I feel like a lot of times when I was little, my mom would say, "You'll understand when you have children of your own." And I was like, "Yeah, whatever." And then she looked completely different to me after I became a mother. I feel like my memories made more sense. I don't know if memories can make sense, but things that happened through my childhood made a lot more sense after I became a mother. And overall, I think, or I hope, that people realize that most of the time your parents were doing the best that they could with what they were given,
with what they knew.
With what they knew. I think that's a common thing too, that you're like, as parents and your parents wanted to provide a better life. And better doesn't, it's not like they had a horrible life, but you just, there's things that you want to do for your children that are important, like travel, culture, things like that, that I feel are important that I want to share with my kids, things that I was exposed to, too. I remember always feeling, I felt like a burden a lot. Like it was, I felt like I was in the way. So I had to make myself helpful.
Useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I'm going to be in the way, then I'm going to do something. So it was really important for me to listen to my kids when they spoke, when they had something to say, when they had an opinion or an idea, or when they do. It's not like it stopped. And having real conversations with your children. I know that sounds weird, but the way that I talk to Mary, or the way that I talk to, or the way that I talk to you, Mary.
Hello.
Hi. Or the way I talk to other friends or my parents now. There's just a weird thing where it's like your parents don't see you as a person and you don't see your parents as a person. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, no, we're just all cohabitating, trying to get through this.
It's like you're too close.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's just you probably just run on a lot of feelings and emotions and the temperature of the room and that type of thing. But I just never, there just wasn't a lot of like genuine conversation. Which seems weird now, considering what I do. I don't know how that happened. But there were lots of other people that I had genuine conversations with, but my parents just weren't. They just wanted to raise, they were raising kids. That's it.
Do you think that they knew that they had people that were having those conversations, so it didn't worry them as much, or they just didn't think about it at all?
I don't know. I felt like they were just always so stressed and trying to get through the day.
Like survive.
Yeah, and tired and that just wasn't important.
I think it's interesting. We're almost like the generation that grew up with parents who thought the only thing you had to do was like provide a shelter and clothing and make sure you were like physically okay.
Right.
And now we are raising kids in a generation where everyone's saying, how is their mental health?
Yeah.
Are you providing what their heart needs? And what's their love language? And all these things. Like,
right.
So I think our age group is that weird dynamic of like, maybe we're just at the very end of parents realizing that it's not just about feeding and sheltering kids. And then we're now trying to figure out how to meet the physical needs, but also the emotional or spiritual or like educational needs in a way our parents didn't have to.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you say that, because in terms of mental, spiritual, emotional, whatever you want to say, I think that if you went to church, your parents assumed that was, we've covered it. I think that mental health was very, it was in the forefront of our family my entire life. I have an uncle who is bipolar and manic, and his episodes were usually, they affected the whole family. And the police were involved, and sometimes the news. And so it was, that was always very aware of it, but always, it always came with a lot of shame. Mostly the glaring eye of everybody, look at what your uncle.
The attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do not do this. It wasn't, are you okay? Do you feel all right? Are you...
Here's why this is happening, and here's what we can do about it.
Right, yeah. There was no conversations like that. It was just always, like, watching the heartache that he caused the people that loved him. Mm-hmm. Not caused, but what comes with the that disease causes.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute that there was any signs of struggle or mental illness, it was... here's a pill. Take this. We grew up, when we were in high school, it was...
and we were in high school the late 90s.
Yeah, so this is like Prozac, Paxil.
Mm-hmm.
All those were just...
There's a pill for everything.
There's a pill for everything. And also, we kind of were coming out of that grunge period where it was like, oh, I'm so, like, just
all
that
the emotions,
teen angst all the time, and look at all these antidepressants I take, and, you know, things like that.
It was cool to be depressed in a way you didn't understand what depression was.
Right, right. Yeah. Like, I wanted, even if I wasn't depressed, I was going to pretend like I was, but I actually was. But it was probably just a depression, not just, I don't know, actually, but it was probably... the majority of it was a depression or just an overwhelming emotional roller coaster that comes with puberty.
Yeah, like adolescence.
Yeah, that's all it... That's not all it was, but I know that...
on top of everything.
On top of everything else, yes. That I... and I... there was... we just didn't talk about it because the last thing you want to do is be the jerk that... adds on to a family that already struggles a lot with mental health. So shut up and take that little yellow pill. I think yellow ones were the Valiums, though. So I'm not sure. Yeah, there was...
There was a lot.
There was a lot. And so I have been probably... uber, super over aware of my children and their mental health and making sure that they're okay and looking for signs of I need help.
As a response to the parenting that you had as a child.
And it wasn't wrong. I mean, even now when I talk about, like, oh, I don't want to give my kids pills and I don't want them to take, you know, I'm really weary of Western medicine and yada, yada, yada. People still, like, that's still kind of foreign to go, well, you could take a pill for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what? But I think that somehow me taking pills for all those things when I was young has made me, well, it's made me do some hard work now. Like, oh, you have to cope, so you can't take this pill. We're going to teach you how to cope instead. And so when my son was talking about, Mom, I feel depressed. A, number one, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
You're 14 years old. B, let's learn some coping mechanisms.
Right. And then,
yeah,
through professional help, if there's something that needs to be done,
right,
it's available.
Yes.
It's not the first response to everything.
No. And also, my other thing is we'll do that and we'll change your diet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take a supplement. We'll try something different. Right.
We'll make sure you're getting enough sleep.
Right. Or there's just in my opinion, there's a million other things that I need to take into consideration before.
That you can control before you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I could do tit for tat this entire episode of this is what my parents did and this is what I'm doing. But that would take a really long time. That would be the longest episode ever.
And sometimes the only way we learn to do something better is by seeing someone do it wrong or for us to do it wrong. So
right.
There's almost like a slight nod of thanks to your parents for
right.
maybe sometimes doing it the way you wouldn't have done it so mm-hmm. that you can see clearer now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And I think I had this really unique experience of being, my parents got divorced when I was like 5, I think, 4 or 5. And I basically lived the first half of my life with my mom, or the first half of the divorce with my mom, and then the second with my dad. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, so until I was like 11 or 12, I lived with my mom, and then I lived with my dad, so... Two very different experiences, two very different parenting styles. And the things that you learn from a single mother and the things you learn from a single father are very different. The things that are considered weak, I think it's mothers like to keep babies. They want to keep you and hold you and coddle you and take care of you. And dads are constantly thinking about how they're going to prepare you to be a decent adult. You know what I mean? Like, mothers are caring for children and fathers are preparing for adulthood. That's how I was parented. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I was parented. And whenever we would cry when we were little, my dad would say, "Is this worth crying about?" And you would consider it, you know. And in my mind, I was always like, yes, this is the worst thing ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And when we would say that, he'd say, if you're going to cry about this, what are you going to do when something really bad happens? And now with my kids, whenever they cry, and my son's 15 years old, so that is fewer and far between now.
Mm-hmm.
I literally just sit and hold them and say, If your body is telling you that you need to cry, then cry until you're done crying. And that, I don't know how different I would be if someone would have held me and said, you can cry.
That your emotions are okay.
Yeah. Instead of don't cry. Or like, I understand. I feel like maybe a more appropriate question of is this worth would be like, is this worth being angry about? Mm-hmm. Like maybe that. But I know in terms of crying, and I cried a lot as a kid. Or maybe I was just a whiny, whiny kid. He was like, I can't take this
maybe
anymore.
Maybe he tried for a long time to behold you. And then finally he was like, you know what? Get over it.
No. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably more accurate. That's probably how the memory. Yeah. I forgot that part. But there was something in him that just wanted me to be completely independent from a man, from him, from just...
Emotions.
Yes. And I think that's how he equated independence was not being emotional. Like, you're strong and you're independent and...
That will make you the safest as an adult.
Right.
Because that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And... We are overly emotional in our house. I think that we take it to the next level in terms of being aware. We have one of those little refrigerator magnets that says, how are you feeling today? You usually see them in like school guidance counselor's mm-hmm. office. And so when I'll be like, how are you today? And the kid's like, ugh, you know, like just a groan. And I'm like, all right, go to the magnet. So I know. And it has helped. Mm-hmm. It's helped.
Just to be aware of how you're feeling, like acknowledge what's going on inside.
Yeah. And Addie has a very hard time verbalizing, or like with her, it's like happy, mad, sad.
Yeah.
That's all she knows. So with her, it's been really helpful, but there's been times where Max will just kind of go over there nonchalantly and move it. And then it's like, okay, well, then that started a conversation and we can talk about some things.
Mm-hmm. But like that's a skill you're giving your children to be a little introspective, to also be aware. So like as a 36-year-old, I just tried to be 30. It has taken me a long time to step back and realize why I said something to someone has more to do with how I was feeling inside than what they did, or why am I being grouchy to my kids? They're laughing and having fun. And why am I like, knock it off? Mm-hmm. Like no joy in this house today. And that's not, they weren't doing anything wrong. They were laughing and actually getting along with each other and not fighting, but I'm in a bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
And like acknowledging that sooner and then being aware of how I'm going to act in relationship to that can save so many problems in the long run. And it took me 30 something years for you to get there. Like mm-hmm. that you are allowing your children to say, now this is how I feel. And then maybe start making connections about how they react to things or what they do when they feel this way, or like what they're doing that they don't want to do because they're letting their emotions dictate things. Like that's
right.
That's powerful.
Yeah. My dad would always like, you do work first. Like you get all the work out of the way first. The idea that you would stop working and take a break and go back to work, that's foreign. Like, no. You do all the work first. Go as hard as you can. We're going to make everybody miserable around us while we do it. And then we can do something that we enjoy. And I still, like, that is one of... I do that with my kids now. Oh, can we have an hour of video games and then we can... You are out of your mind.
This house is a mess.
You are nuts. Yeah, it's just... And I still feel that way. Like, mm-hmm. it still makes me... But I'm grateful for it because I can't... I'm not a... No. You run in and get a spoonful of peanut butter while we do this landscaping, but we're not stopping. So work ethic, I think that was a big one. That was
a good one.
I think, I don't know. In terms of that kind of stuff, manual labor, but it's also very, this is definitely not a word, but this is what came up, martyr-y.
Oh, martyr-y, yeah. That's a word.
Martyr-y.
For right now.
Yeah. No, but it's very like, look what I did. And taking pride in it when you get done and those things. And I have, someone always says whenever we talk about kids, you know, the first sign of growing old is talking about the moral decline of the generation behind you. And it's like, I feel like I do that more and more every day. Like these kids, they just don't get it.
Kids today and their phones.
Yes, that's a big one. Oh my gosh. So we're coming out of moratorium week. Which is in high school, and I don't know if this is just a thing here in Indiana, but like through this, like a law, state law is you can't practice any sports this week, or last week is what it was. And so I let Max have his Xbox for the week. And just
been gone for a while, right?
Years. Yeah. Yeah. For 2 years. We have a video of the birthday when he got it. And Addie found it on an iPad the other day, the video. She was like, hey, Max, remember when you got your Xbox? And he's so little. And I was like, I don't even know how long he had it before we took it away. But yeah, I think he's been without it for 2 years. Like, I was just, we're not doing this. We're not doing gaming systems. And so I said, okay, you're right. You have not missed a practice all summer. You just finished summer school. Yeah, we can do it. Woke up morning to when I made him turn it off at 10 o'clock every night. That's all he
just did. Just went hardcore.
That's all he did.
Oh, my gosh.
And I told him, I said, I think that a good practice would be maybe 2 to 3 hours a day. That's a lot. But it's moratorium week. You haven't played in a very long time. I get it. All those things. He couldn't self-monitor. We would have to be like, you have to eat. God knows how many times he showered this week, if he did at all. Like, I just thought, you know what? Don't say anything outside of me.
See how this goes.
Yeah. He has chores, and he would do his chores at some point. But those are just daily, everyday chores he would get done. But other than that, he was on the game. He didn't go to a friend's house. He literally didn't do anything but game. And it made me crazy.
Yeah.
It made me absolutely out of my mind. And so this morning when I left at 6 o'clock, I unplugged it and I put it in my car because moratorium week is over. And as I was doing it, I unplugged it and I thought, oh my gosh, what if there's stuff saved on here? And I don't care.
His high score just went away.
I don't even know if that's how that works.
So is it gone again?
It's gone again. Yeah, it's gone again. And I don't know when it'll come back because it was an experiment and a practice for me to go, I want to see if he can monitor himself, if he can make good choices, if he can. And he just
in moderation.
Nothing. No. Yeah. No. When I went up there today and took it, there's an empty pizza box, empty bags of potato chips, pop cans. And I thought, okay, this is it.
This continues, he's going to be living in my basement at 40.
Exactly.
This exact same setup.
That is exactly the argument that I have with John. John's like, I don't know why you're so hard on him about this. And I was like, think about the people that gamed when we were kids. Think about the people that didn't leave their room and gamed when we were kids.
They're still there.
Yeah. That might be a very broad statement, but in my mind, they are.
Or they're now rich because they design design internet things.
That's true too.
So this could be just research.
I don't know. This is a really hot button issue with me, but I don't know how playing a game where you kill people and with semi-automatic weapons, and I can't get behind it. Mario Kart all the way.
Right. Duck Hunt.
Yeah. And even that's a gun, and so I get it. But there, I just can't. Yeah. I can't. And this,
it becomes too real. Also, it looks like real life.
Well, that was the original. Yeah, that was the original reason that I took it away. Was that he was so aggressive and angry when it was like, okay, it's time to get off of that, and then it was never like, okay, shut it off and walk away. We've talked about pathways in your brain. That's my concern. That's creating a violent pathway or a pathway of between what's reality and what's not. And I don't know. I could probably do some homework and then have some. Actually, I'll probably do that after this episode so that when I go home and he starts in on me about, oh, why'd you take it? I'll be like, here is a pie chart about how
I've created this slideshow.
Yes.
On the drive home.
Of why you shouldn't have this. But then it's like, oh, he just stares at his phone. We'll take away his phone. It's like, it's so much work for them to have all these things. It feels like it was so much easier. When our parents were parenting, it was easy. It had to have been easier.
We didn't have cable, so we had like 4 stations to watch. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the day, it was soap operas, and nobody wanted to watch those. So you had to get up and do something.
Mm-hmm.
We had an Atari. How old am I? We had an Atari, but we didn't play it very often.
Yeah. Because it was an Atari and we had Nintendo by then.
Right. My sister and I pooled our money together and bought a used Nintendo from like the newspaper want ads.
What?
Yeah. Because my parents were like, no, we're never buying that. We're never buying that. So my sister and I used like Christmas money or something and bought a used one. And we had to drive to somebody's house. Like it was you listed things for sale in the newspaper. And my dad called and we bought a used one and had it for a while, but we still, I mean, we could play it. No one ever told us to get off, but I also, we were girls and we couldn't, we couldn't sit there all day and play that. We just weren't built like that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's it. We had to go outside and play, read a book. Oh, you're bored? I don't care.
Yeah.
My job is not to entertain you.
Isn't that wild too? Mm-hmm. Is that like we feel this need to plan, and not all the time, but I know more than my parents did. Mm-hmm. Like we will have events and we will have activities and we will go here on this day. And my parents were like, they would get up and go to work.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't see them until 5 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, you're safe. Summer. Here's some food.
Yeah.
See you later.
I'll call you at lunch.
Right.
Don't bother me.
That's what we took Ellie to camp last week, and we stopped and got dinner or lunch on the way home. And so it's just Chris, Harper, and I, and Harper sitting at the table. And she's like, so what are we going to do? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, Ellie's gone. What are we going to do for the next 4 days? And I'm just like, huh, I hadn't thought about it. So I texted a friend's mom and was like, can Chloe come over and play? Because apparently I have to entertain this 7-year-old who doesn't know what to do by herself. But she, yeah, I'd set her up to think that the minute her sister left, like, I was going to start dancing and doing things, or I don't know.
They do. They have these expectations of what are you going to, like, we're these
now what?
Court jesters or something, and hey, do a trick. No, Addie has a lot of anxiety about it. Like, what are we doing today? What are we doing tomorrow? What are we doing the next day? So we have to have a calendar, but that's a part of her condition,
mm-hmm.
is high anxiety about the future.
Yeah.
So we put as much stuff on a calendar as we can. You know, Max is a teenager. Outside of him, like, I need a ride, or I don't have any clean underwear. That's about all he needs from us. Yeah.
We're not there yet.
Yeah. I remember having the worst stomach flu of my life. Literally, we were at a buffet, and I'm sure
that's where you got the stomach bug.
That is, yeah. We were with my best friend Rachel was with us. And we were coming home from the lake, and we stopped at a buffet, and I got ranch dressing. And I remember her going, that doesn't smell good. I don't think I'm going to get it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to load it up. Let me scooch by and get that ranch. And then I got home, and I remember it was horrible. It was horrible. And my dad and my Aunt Karen had to go to work the next day, and they just left me at home. I remember crawling out of my bed and was so sick that I couldn't stand up, and I had to crawl to the bathroom. I remember going, oh my gosh, like, I really can't stand up. Because I want to be honest to the listener here, there's a good chance I was being dramatic. But I remember, like, the stomach cramps being so weak that I couldn't get up. And I could tell you my Aunt Karen's work phone number today. I called her on my light up neon phone.
Oh, was it see through?
Yeah.
I wanted one of those.
Called the hotline at 9 then too. And I was like, I think I'm gonna die. And I was in the sixth grade. Yeah, I was in the sixth grade. She was like, You're not gonna die. You're going to be fine. And she was like, and told me, like, there's ginger ale, there's this, whatever. I could not imagine leaving my kids at home sick alone. But also, I am in a situation where I don't have to work a 9-to-5 job every day. I'm very fortunate in that. But oh my gosh, they really didn't care. And I don't know if that made me tough, because now, like, if I'm sick, I won't tell you that I'm sick.
Right.
I'm not.
Got stuff to do.
Yeah, we have things to do. We're going to power through. And if you think laying down and resting is going to make me feel better, you're out of your mind.
No.
I'm going to push it to the limit. Nobody has time for this crap. And so that's another thing. Like, if you are sick, you keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't bother people with that. And I'll say that, oh my gosh. This is a little bit funny, but it's okay. I'm going to share it. My mom, we've been going to the doctor with my mom recently, and my mom told her doctor, specialist, I've had bronchitis since March. And I was like, whoa, my mom's had bronchitis since I was 7. Like, my mom always has bronchitis. Always. She's a smoker. She's always smoked. But she always has bronchitis. It has nothing to do with her smoking. She always has bronchitis. And my sister and I and my mom laughed pretty hard when I said that. And that's another thing. Like, if somebody says they have bronchitis, it's like a trigger word for me. Nope. No, you don't. No, you don't. Shut up. I don't want to hear anything about it.
Work through it.
Yep. Nope. 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 Get a lozenge. Drink some tea. Get out of my face.
Have some hot tea.
So that's one of the things I feel like I'm instilling in my kids. Like, if you're sick, you better be sick. And so whenever they're like, I'm sick, and I was like, do you have a temperature? No.
You're fine.
Are you on the toilet? No. Nope. Are you throwing up blood? Nope. You're fine. Nope. See you later.
Yeah,
bye.
Maybe you're just tired.
Yeah.
Go to bed a little earlier tonight. Thanks.
That's usually what it is. And if your tummy hurts that bad, I'm going to give you some apple cider vinegar and some honey, because if it hurts that bad, you'll drink this.
Yeah.
And that's almost always. Max did that a lot this year, school, calling me and going, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. At the nurse all the time, to where we had to email teachers and say, do not let him go to the nurse unless he's throwing up.
Or bleeding.
Bleeding, yes. Mm-hmm. Don't let him go to the nurse. So I started showing up with like a shaker and apple cider vinegar and honey. If you feel that bad, then you'll drink this. And the school office ladies loved me. They thought it was hilarious every single time. And we went to school with half of them, so. Oh, my gosh.
When I was a kid, I only pretended to be sick. I don't ever really remember truly being sick. I remember once I remember once having a really bad ear ache. Like, okay. It was just ringing in my ear. And I think I had faked so often leading up to that point that no one really believed me that my ear hurt. Like, I remember laying in bed, and I almost felt like I couldn't hear because the ringing was so, mm-hmm. so loud. I probably had a really intense ear infection, and no one took me to the doctor because in the few years leading up to that, I had on more than one occasion ridden in an ambulance for a fake injury that...
Are you serious?
Probably didn't even need a Band-Aid. By the time I was in fourth grade, I had taken 2 ambulance rides to the hospital for injuries that I might have been pretending about. I was such an asshole as a child. Like,
what did your parents do?
What can you do when your child is adamant that they're dying and...
Oh my gosh.
Not giving it up.
Was your second ambulance ride from when your parents beat you so much for lying about the first ambulance ride? Oh my gosh.
The first one was in kindergarten. Hanging upside down off the swing set in our backyard. And I, like, you know, when you would hang and just have it underneath your, like, knees?
Yeah.
And I fell.
Ouch.
And, like, collapsed onto my head. And, like, I think I hurt myself, but I scared myself more than anything. But my mom saw it from her kitchen window and, like, your fear is neck injury.
Right.
Well, my mom stayed at home with us when we were kids, but she also babysat. So there was probably like 5 to 7 other kids running around the house, like in the yard. And the fear of my 6-year-old just fell and like crumpled her spine.
Right.
She also picked me up and ran with me through the yard as I'm screaming. Ruth. And tried to put me in the car and then realized that wasn't a good idea. So she called the ambulance. The paramedics came, had to get me out of the car. And they're all like, hey, next time you think she might have a neck injury, like, let's not move her. So now if like whatever brain trauma I have or, you know, learning disability might suddenly pop up. I'm like, well, my mom shook me as a kindergartner. But I went to the hospital. I was fine. And then in fourth grade, I had a roller skating accident at the roller cave. And I acted like I broke my arm. I didn't break my arm.
Did you know you didn't break your arm, or did you think you hurt your arm and there was a possibility you broke it?
I think I was so embarrassed that I fell that I was going to play this up. For, and I can tell you today who fell on me. Her name is Ashley. And I didn't like her.
Do you want me to edit that?
And I was so angry that she fell on me that I was going to, we're going to take this to the hospital. So by the time I probably was really hurt, my parents were like, we have trusted you. And every time you're absolutely fine. So you know what's going to happen? Nothing. You're going to ride that out. So when I broke my nose and probably should have gone to the hospital and have it set. No.
No.
When I was riding my bike and ran into the neighbor's dog and flew off. Okay, they did take me to the hospital that time because I had a concussion. Like, my mom said I was laying on the couch at home just crying and saying I wanted to go home. And my mom was like, no, we are home. And that's freaking me out. So they took me. But
yeah,
I think the opposite. They didn't tell me to brush it off. They always believed me. And then they realized I was a liar. And so they stopped believing me.
Yikes. That's funny, though.
Sorry. So when my kids, the minute they say they're sick, I don't believe them. Because I know they are my children. Mm-hmm. And I know that they are making that up. And I know.
I did that a lot. I didn't fake being sick, but I would fake injury. Like, I remember, this is a very telling story on a lot of levels, probably. But we would be in the drop-off line for school in the morning, and I would see other kids talking to their parents. And I didn't want to talk to my parents because I honestly felt like I was bothering them.
Mm-hmm. Like, so, your existence bothered them?
No, I think that if I talk to them, like, it's in the morning, like, just, like, nobody wants to talk to anybody.
Everybody be quiet.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably a lot of that. So we would be in the car line, and I would see other kids talking to their parents and being engaged. And so I would move my lips and make it look like I was talking to my parents.
So if someone looked at you, they would think you were communicating. I'm laughing, but that's also really sad.
It is. But I would also, do you remember those long quilted coats we would wear when we were kids? I would also sit on my legs in the car and cover up my knees. And I'd be like, maybe someone's going to look in here and think that I don't have any legs. What if somebody thought that?
That'd be cool.
See what happens when you don't talk to your kids in the car line?
The things that they do in their heads. I remember when I was little, we would drive somewhere and it would be raining and you'd see the raindrops going down the window, like where you sat. And I used to pick the raindrops and race them and be like, I bet that one's going to get faster. I bet that one's going to go down faster. Like, that's what I did before cell phones in the car, is I raced raindrops on the window.
So I don't know if we were in the car with our kids and you told that story, if it was just me and you. And I was like, is that what you're doing right now? But yeah, I remember you saying that. But yeah, those are the things you did to entertain yourself.
Yeah. So when my kids say they're bored and we're driving an hour away, I don't care at all. You know what I did? I raced raindrops. Mm-hmm. Or I'd listen to, I remember, like, we would listen to, like, the romantic songs that would play at night on the radio when it would be like the slow jams or I don't know, whatever. Like
105.7?
Yeah. The B105 would do the, and I would look at the stars and pretend that the boy I had a crush on was also listening to the same song as me. Aww. And probably looking at that star, and we were going to be in love.
Are you going to name drop that guy?
Oh, Brian.
Which one? One that we knew?
No.
Oh, okay. Mm-mm. Never mind.
Actually, Brian, when I was like in third or fourth grade, our parents always told us that we would get married. And now I live in the same town.
Oh, you do?
That he lived in and his family lives there. Yeah.
Oh. How'd that shape
you? I'm still
you?
Waiting for him to ask me to marry him. It's awkward that we're both married with our own families now, but I'm still holding out.
Still waiting.
I don't think I would even know what he looked like now, but he was my first boyfriend.
Aw.
Also the first boy I kissed.
Really?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it, though.
Okay, it's too painful. Yeah. Too painful.
Still healing.
I used to think the moon followed me. Yeah. I was certain.
Because, yeah.
Why do I mean, the world revolves around me, right?
Still, yeah.
No, I just assumed like it was our secret. Like nobody else knew that the moon followed me. And this when I was little.
Yeah.
But we were always in the car at night, like getting dropped off or picked up or taken. Like it was just always, I felt like we were always in the car. And so.
It was always there.
I think that it was a form of protection. Like I thought it was protecting me somehow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how old I was probably way too old when I thought, hold on a second. I don't think this thing's following me. Yeah. It is. It's interesting the things that kids do to cope, too, in such a sweet, innocent way. Mm-hmm.
The way they connect their world.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with, like, I have a feeling that you're going to say no, but mm-hmm. I'm going to be polite and ask.
Thank you.
The astrological chart.
No.
No. I just had, well, I had mine read. Like, I had somebody map out where the planets and the stars and the moon were when I was, like, when the moment I was born.
Okay.
To the minute where
that's
I was born.
That's kind of neat, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they also do it, like, according to, like, I was born in St. Francis Hospital in Beech Grove, Indiana. So they map it out according to where you were on the planet,
what would
too.
Have been.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it is cool, but it talks about like exactly where the sun was and how that plays into like you as a person and why I love the summer because June 29th, you mm-hmm. know, like that was my birthday.
Was. It's not anymore though.
No, it passed. No. Oh, it was. I mean, it was last.
Oh,
it was last
okay,
week.
You got it.
Thinking.
That was
yeah.
a second.
Yeah.
You got
sorry. Yeah, no, not my birthday anymore. It's going to change next year.
Got a new one.
Yep. But that's just a fun mm-hmm. thing to do. And I think that according to that, so at the time I was born, the sun was almost directly above. It was around noon, I think. It had to have been. I don't know. I don't remember what my birth certificate said. But that also plays into like your relationship with your parents because the sun is... I guess the sun represents the father and the moon represents the mother maybe, or that's like the pot or the masculine and feminine energies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of, it's like anything. It's not fun to believe. I mean, it's fun to believe some things, but it's just fun to know.
It's interesting to
know. Yeah.
How it
yes,
fits.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I would not base my life off of it. But
have you seen those posters where you can get like a moment in time and what the stars
uh-huh.
look like?
Isn't
and
that
you can
neat?
Yeah,
that would be really cool. That would be a good. I think that's how they advertise them. But like birth gifts and
like
anniversary gifts,
a wedding gift.
Yeah,
or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of.
I like those too. Do you remember the scrolls? My best friend Rachel and I would walk to Hook's drugstore in mm-hmm. town. And there were these little scrolls, and it was, like, for each astrological sign.
Mm-mm.
And you could pull it out, and it was, like, a month. And it would like, give your horoscope for the month. And I would they were, like, 99 cents, and I would always buy them. And I don't even think I understood anything that it said. I mean, so outside of those.
It felt good.
And the back of 17 magazine telling me if my crush was going to love me or not.
Yeah, those were important.
Under cancer, that was it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I just think that there's other things that play into you're coping, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that when you don't feel like you're in control or you don't feel
yeah.
safe or protected, you seek out other things.
Well, yeah. Whatever those holes are, you're looking to fill them forever. If they don't get fixed.
Yeah. Like kids, mm-hmm. kids are born complete people and they need things. And if the parents or the caregivers or the world just
mm-hmm.
doesn't provide it, they're going to figure out how to do it themselves. And it's usually probably going to be the first thing that shows up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the best thing
because
they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be the first thing that they find. And I feel like in this moment, we should all give ourselves a little bit of grace and go, you were a baby
mm-hmm.
trying to make up for the things that your parents lacked.
The other babies, because they were,
yeah.
you know, like the idea that our parents are just as clueless, you know, like not in like a dumb way, just like a, you know what? We are all trying to figure this out. And sometimes we do it well and sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you've touched on this in the last couple episodes, a couple of times that having those conversations out loud with your kids and going, hey, right now is not our best time.
Mm-hmm.
So just I'm here, you're here. Let's keep these lines of communication open.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to tell me what you need. Don't be afraid to tell me where I can help. And also trust me as your parent to say, I'm doing what's best for you right now.
Right. We're doing that. So my kids are 7 and 9, and there's some relationships that we've had to stop recently, and they are not at an age where we need to tell them why those had to stop. So I have to say, you have to trust mommy that she is making the healthiest choice to keep you safe. And when you're older, we can talk about this. But for now, here's what you need to know. And also, I don't know all the answers. We're doing what we think is best right now. And if we figure out that's not best, we will change course. But until we find that this isn't working, we're going to keep trying this. And we're going to keep asking for help when we don't know the answer. And we're going to trust that if we do hard or obedient things right now, it will work out. It will work out for us. Even if it feels hard right now. And I don't know all the answers. I say that a lot. Now that my kid's 9, like, she's starting to ask questions that, like, you're too smart for that. You need to stop. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why that works like that. Or mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that really hard adult question that adults don't even know the answer to.
Right.
But I keep asking them.
Yeah. And when I can help, I will. And if I can't, I'm going to point you in the right direction.
Right. Or we'll learn I'll together. I'll assist
you. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I didn't think it was going to be a life lesson until it was. And I think that's parenting.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked Max to paint our fireplace black. It was white.
The brick.
White walls. Yeah, the brick. Mm-hmm. Asked him to paint the whole thing black. He asked if he could help. I was doing it. And I said, absolutely. And I was like, here, trim it out. Well, he was very, very careless in his painting. And I said, hey, let me just show you, like, this is how you, like, I can't yell at him for not doing it right if I haven't shown him how to do right. it.
He's never done it before.
Right. So let's do this. Let's talk about painting walls and how it's different than painting in Mr. Yule's class. Mm-hmm. So we're doing it. But then he realizes there's a lot of crevices and there's a lot of stuff and this is going to take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Gets careless again. Big black mark on the wall. Totally. And our walls have been white for like 5 years, which means we're going to have to find a white color and repaint that entire wall. Like, you can't just, yeah, I know. So he did that, and I come downstairs and he's not painting anymore, and he had gone to his room or something. And I said, what happened? And John said, well, he messed up, so he doesn't want to do it anymore. And I was like, no, 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 no. This is not how that works. So I called him downstairs and I said, you started this project. You're going to finish it. Well, yeah, I'm bad at it.
Welcome to the club. Yeah.
Did you think you were going to be some savant wall painter? Yeah. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
You have to be mindful and careful and slow and precise. Yeah, you're just going to have to do it.
Right.
I'm not going to let you just quit.
And keep doing it until you get better.
Yeah. And then meet you. You're not good at something. You're going to quit doing it.
You're going to make a mess of it.
And then you're going to have me come and fix it. Oh, little man, let me tell you how this could blow up.
Let's sit down and talk about this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, something awful and horrible happening in college where you made a really bad decision and I'm just going to swoop in and fix it. Oh, no, 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 no.
No.
But you see that happen a lot. And you see that happen into people's late 20s and into their 30s. And then what?
Yeah, I'm married to someone who... Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
You've watched it.
Yeah. Like, we're going to do what's easiest in this very moment and then quit if it's hard. But it will get harder in a year or 5 minutes from now, and I'll deal with whatever that mess is mm-hmm. when it comes, but never think at the time, if I just did this the right way or slower or took more time
sitting in it
and tried yeah. to not make it easy,
yeah,
it would be better in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot.
That's a lot for a paint project.
I know it was, and it was just it turned into such an intense thing moment for me. To me, go,
because it's a you need button. To take a breath. It's a button for you. You didn't even know you had. Like, oh no, I'm not going to raise you to create mess and then run away.
Yeah, and that wasn't necessarily my experience, but it a similar experience that I had, and I didn't even realize this until like 2 days ago that was the tie between me and Max and my father and I, that we, my brother was a natural athlete. He was a very good athlete. Me, not so much.
He took all of it.
Any athletic ability that was, it all went to him. But I so desperately wanted to find something that I was good at. I'm not gonna say we were raised in a town, but yeah, a lot of my friends were athletes, so I naturally wanted to be an athlete. And I remember when I came to the school system, I didn't get there in time to sign up for basketball, and I really, really wanted to play basketball. And I still have a lot of animosity towards the mom that was the coach that said, "No, you don't get to play." And I thought, well, why not? And she wouldn't.
It's not the NBA.
No, but we were in the fifth grade and she wouldn't let me sign up. And the story about why I wasn't at school for 2 months, why I couldn't sign up, is I feel like she could have had an open heart and really done something nice for me. So I went to every basketball practice because I lived in town. I walked over to the elementary gym and I sat there and I dribbled the ball the whole practice. Like, I still get choked up thinking about it because I was like, why won't you let me play?
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind
and
of
an adult that did that kind of power trip over a child.
And it bums me out because I thought she was a nice mom. And I mean, later in life, I thought she was nice. And I was just like, man, that really sucked that you did that. But so I just wanted to find, so I tried everything. I tried every single sport, and after a couple of tries, or after a practice, or after a season, you know, like played volleyball and cheered and whatever. And if I wasn't the best one at it, then I was like, okay, well then this isn't the sport for me, and I quit. And I really wish my dad would have made me stick with something, because as soon as it got hard, I stopped doing it. And it wasn't, I don't think that's carried on in every part of my life, but in those moments, that just, I really wish that he would have made me just stick with it.
Yeah.
But when he realized that I wasn't, I mean, and there's also, I have to also say, my father probably looked at me and was like, you're a dancer. You're not an athlete. You're a dancer. Just keep dancing. And I was like, no, I want to play, you know? And he was like, stick to what you know, girlfriend, just dance. And that was probably a part of it, and a lot. And so he always took me to the theater. We went to musicals, all kinds of things. Just live performance arts is what he let me do that, and he exposed me to it. And I should probably be more grateful for that instead of going, why didn't you make me stick with golf?
I could be in the WNBA right now if my dad didn't make me quit.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with me being 5'1" and a half. Right?
Yeah, so I think that's kind of just where we started again, of like, you do the best that you can with the knowledge that you have. And also, when we were kids, I think the idea that our parents knew us well, or did try to do things in our best interest, seems so foreign because we were wounded, or we didn't see it the same way from our kid brains. But I think, and I hope that my kids can look back later with this kind of grace too, of like, yeah, my parents did some things wrong, but I think they probably at the time were doing what they thought was best for us.
Oh, I know that. I know that. Like, I wanted for nothing, for nothing. That made a learning curve in finances when I was in my 20s, but I did. Everything that I took away from my childhood, from my parents' parenting style, has benefited me way more than what I'm going to therapy for now. I think that, is that the way I could say that? It's, I have so much, there's so many good things that happened. Obviously, it was fine. It was fine. My childhood was not terrible.
I think, so I read this book recently called Girl, Wash Your Face by Rachel Hollis, and she talks about in it, like, if we regret some of the things in our past and we're angry about them, you have to also temper that with anything good that you have in your life right now is also because of your past. So, mm-hmm. like, if you're going to be angry about something, you also have to acknowledge that maybe the good things in your life at this moment wouldn't have happened because of that either. Mm-hmm. So would I change some things? Yes, but you don't know what is connected to that and what good would I have lost if I didn't have that experience too. So I think just reflecting and doing better now as kids, like with our own kids, is the best we can do. But also know that the stuff we like about ourselves or the good things that we have in our lives are maybe the result of our parents doing some things right.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I don't know if I've ever met anyone that's been like, my parents were perfect and they did everything right.
Oh, I think I have.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Now, like, you shaking your head, I can think of a couple people that would be pretty close, probably.
That think that. Not that they actually...
Yeah, not that that was the case, but I'm also so envious.
That you still have that, like...
Yeah.
Veil of...
Yeah.
Perfection. But I think that also sets you up for a lot of hard lessons at some point.
Yeah.
And the longer you go without learning that, the harder you fall.
Mm-hmm. What I read the other day, and I'm sure it was a meme or Instagram or whatever you want to say. It said, I want to give my kids just enough dysfunction that they have a good sense of humor.
Right.
And that's kind of true.
That's why we're funny.
Yeah. That is why we're funny. Talking about filling the holes of dysfunction.
Right.
We filled them with humor.
Right.
Yeah.
And snacks.
Yes.
Food and humor. That's how I filled it.
A really awesome memory. Max asked me the other day, he said, when did you know you were funny? And I thought, I didn't, but thank you. And both of my parents are very funny people.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily funny to me, but to the people around them, they really do think that they're very funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I know my parents are funny, but...
Right, it's annoying, you know, because it's your parents.
Right.
Yeah.
But they do. They're good storytellers. They can share a joke,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is. They are funny. But I remember, I told Max, I said, I remember one of the best feelings as a child and growing up and still today as an adult, if I can make my parents laugh, oh my gosh. I don't think that there's anything better than that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of going like, if I can make my parents laugh and my teenage kids laugh,
right.
Wow.
It's a good day.
That's all I need. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandma always said that that's why grandkids and grandparents get along so well is because they have a common enemy. And I was like, I don't get that. And then,
oh,
I get it.
Now I get it.
Yeah. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and podcast extras. Follow us at notterriblepodcast on Instagram or Twitter. We would love to hear your feedback and comments. Leave us a voicemail at 317-662-4066 or email us at notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. My not terrible this week is that I have been vegan since my birthday. So this is day 11 of no meat or animal products, dairy, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I honestly think that I could talk about it. I couldn't teach anybody anything. But the biggest thing that I've ever used to treat my depression as an adult is my diet. Mm-hmm. And I know how great I feel right now and how well I'm sleeping when I'm not watching The Sopranos before bed. and how dewy and pretty my skin is.
See, that's a...
No, and it's also because I've been outside a ton and there's... But I know that my skin, my sleep... And my mental stability usually stem from my diet. So 11 days in, I did this last year around my birthday and I got to like day 32 or 33 and then the wheels fell off. Mm-hmm. But
cheeseburger.
Yep. I just, we'll see. We'll see how long. Mm-hmm. We'll see how long. I would like to see
long.
Yeah. Long term, how well I feel. And if some weight loss occurs, that'd be great. But I'm actually trying to not think about that because I think with the vegan diet, weight loss is it's slow and it's steady, but it's slow.
Yeah.
But so I promised myself I wouldn't weigh myself for a whole month, the first month. So we'll see how it goes.
Right.
I'll keep you guys updated. Cool. I know how much people love to hear about the vegan diet.
Remember how when I tried to talk to you about being a vegan, I said, oh, the vegan diet? That's how much I don't want to just eat vegetables.
Yeah. It does. It opens it up. And I also know, how unhealthy I am based on the fact that I quit cooking. Yeah. And that bums me out because I enjoy it and I love it. And I haven't cooked a lot. Like even through the holidays, I didn't cook and it just, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been cooking a ton and I love it and it makes me happy. Not even cooking because it's just a lot like of
preparing food. Yeah.
A lot of preparing. So yeah, that makes me feel very not terrible.
Awesome. My not terrible is kind of related to that. I haven't been cooking either. And I just when you said kind of the connection between like your mental health and being in the kitchen, when we moved, I would say we have a lot of work to do on our house. And I really don't like my kitchen and I don't like being in my kitchen. And that bums me out because I do like feeding my family and making meals. So this weekend, my kids were gone and I had like things that I had grown in my garden. So I had a zucchini and two jalapeno peppers. And I was like, I'm going to make some dinner with this. So I just like did a vegetable stir fry with chicken. But I used the food that I grew in the garden outside of my kitchen window. And I can't tell you how, like it was the best meal I had ever had. And it was just some vegetables and chicken just because I grew it. Although I did get a little ambitious because I just wanted to use everything I grew. So I threw it all in the same pot and then we were eating it. And Chris is like, I can't feel my face. And I was like, yeah, this is really hot. Like I didn't scale back the hot, like everything I grew, I put in that pot and now I have snot running down my face while I'm eating this really hot stir fry. So
yeah, fresh jalapenos will change your life.
They will also change your bathroom tendencies for the next like 3 days. I destroy, like hindsight, I'm not going to use everything in the same.
Yeah. Fresh, the power of fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
I mean, it will, it's
cleansing.
It's cleansing on multiple levels, but there is, I think there's a TED talk about that, about the power of growing your own food and how just rewarding and what a form of meditation it is.
I have never felt more satisfied than like I set that one zucchini and those two peppers on my counter for like 3 days and it was just like, hey guys, like so like they were a monument and then I cooked with them and I fed my husband with them. Like I was like, this is it.
It was like an Oscar.
It was. No one applauded at the end and everyone was crying because it was so hot, but in my heart it felt good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. So we got to take care of some business talk. Yes. So We are. One of the things, and I know that if anyone listens to podcasts, you hear this all the time about how to help out the podcast and what we need from our listeners. Like, we're getting lots of fun things on social media. We're hearing lots of good feedback. We need that to show up on our reviews. So we need, for right now, people to go to iTunes and leave reviews. At the end of the show, we like to read one of those, and we're doing that. So we want to like start featuring more of our listeners on the podcast. We also are preparing for an upcoming episode where we take questions and comments and, I don't know, observations from listeners.
Right. So just an open forum where we're going to share.
Yeah. Or did we tell a story and we leave a gap that you kind of wondered about? Or I'm sure we did that.
I know we did.
Yes. Or do you have a comment, or you have a story that relates to something that we've talked about? So we just want to start hearing. We need emails. We have a phone number on the website. You can call and leave us a voicemail. We might use your voicemail on an upcoming episode. Ooh. Yeah, that's fancy. We'll have to figure out how to do that.
I'll work on that.
So we just need to start kind of hearing from people. Also, do you want to talk about our email?
Oh, yeah. So as I edit all of our podcasts, there are lots of little outtakes that I have a little outtakes folder of Mary and I and the crazy things we say that probably aren't podcast worthy. But I've got enough to where it could be like a bloopers reel almost. A little bonus episode that we thought we could share with our email subscribers.
So that's going to...
That'll
be in August.
Yeah, that'll be an August drop. So go and subscribe to notterrible@gmail.com.
No.
No?
No.
I'll put that in there.
Go to notterriblepodcast.com and go to the email subscription. There's like a tab and you can subscribe there. And we have not sent out any emails yet. We're just kind of gathering the subscribers. And you'll start hearing from us probably in the next few weeks. And that extra bonus episode will just go to subscribers. It won't be on the actual.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
so like, maybe you should subscribe. Obviously, you don't get the emails if you don't know how to sign up. Jessica.
Actually, I do. I just heard email and I was like, well, surely you would email us and we'll email you back and tell you that you can. Yeah, I actually do know how subscriptions work, but in my mind, it just came out wrong.
This will be on the blooper reel, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Okay.
See you later.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from CarolinaGirl0508, who wrote, I look forward each Monday to a new installment of Not Terrible. I appreciate that neither host pulls any punches, and they seem willing to freely share their hurts and struggles.
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.